everything you know will change.
Like to have everybody's attention for a moment.
You the man.
What's that mean? You the man.
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, now all of a sudden you're stepping up to the next level of competition.
All right, listen up.
Welcome to The Rundown. Here's Desmond Johnson.
Well, it's Saturday, Sports Up fans, and you know what that means. Welcome to The Rundown. Lots to recap and look forward to. UNC versus Duke Part 3. Godzilla is back. We'll break down last night's ACC semifinal matchups. A bit of a surprise in Game 1, gentlemen. We wouldn't even expect to talk about Virginia and Florida State, but we'll get to that. And tonight's ACC final. Can the ACC get three number one seeds in the NCAA tourney tomorrow night during Selection Sunday? Plus, NFL kicked off a wild free agency period. Is the team to watch going forward the Cleveland Browns? And should the Hornets tank the rest of the season and try to sneak up on the lottery? All that and more. This is The Rundown. I am your host, Desmond Johnson, joined by Rod Funderburk, John Oshevsky, Sawyer Dillon, producer extraordinaire, intern Aaron in the house, man, in our social media. Our call-in question and Twitter question for today, intern Aaron putting the poll up on our Twitter as we speak. What will Zion Williamson be in the NBA? Legend, all-star, or just a good rotational player? And I'm curious to see what people think about that. 336-777-1600 is the number to call if you want to chime in on anything we've got coming in here over the next 2 hours. A loaded rundown, a whole lot of stuff to talk about. But first, I guess we need to get into this little game that happened last night, UNC versus Duke. I don't even really – I mean, it was a great game.
The sun is shining.
The sun is shining for some reason this Saturday morning. Yeah,
it's shining.
Normally it's not.
Yeah, well,
even it would have shined a little brighter if the outcome was a little different last night.
You know what? I slept like a baby last night. I really did. I mean, Zion had 31 and whatever, and I said, let Zion go off and make the rest of Duke beat you. And honestly, Carolina shot 4 for 27 or something last night from three?
Yeah.
And it came down to a last-second possession. Kobe had a chance to win it at the end and just missed the shot. I mean, I can't really be mad at him.
What do you do? I mean, my phone was ringing at 12:30 last night some Duke fans
who
just wanted to rub it in. And the crazy thing is I didn't even talk trash when we won the first two times. You know what I mean? Yep, with the sun shining and everything, it's like that old saying, every once in a while, even the sun shines on a dog's behind.
I mean, my only issue is that Duke fans are taking this as justification of this whole asterisk talk, and we need to stop this right now. Like, it's ridiculous that they think that they're invincible with Zion, because honestly, I've been watching this Duke team the past 3 weeks, and even with Zion back the past two games, it looks like Zion and, like, a bunch of, like, average parts. Like, they're all watching him.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree.
Someone's going to come up and beat them here in the next week or two in the tournament. Like, I don't feel confident about them winning the whole thing. Like, they don't seem not thick enough. They don't seem deep enough to do it. But
in that game last night, could have went either way. Give me a break. Oh my gosh. And, you know, I mean, and it did go. It just kept going back and forth, and which made it, you know, great theater for sure. I mean, it was a joy to watch. But the 4 for 27 from 3-point land really hurt.
It was definitely a joy to watch. You know, I noticed something about Carolina when I was watching last night. You know, when we came out in the first half, Carolina set screens. We even set double screens. We set screens on the screener. And we were just really rotating, and we were playing good ball. And we got away from that the last 2 minutes of the first half. Yeah. And then we came out the second half, and it looks like we were just trying to play one-on-one ball, almost like a street-style ball. And, of course, that's not going to work when you have a big man like Zion down in the middle. And then, of course, at the very end, 10 seconds left on the clock. I expected Roy Williams to call timeout.
Why would you expect that? He never calls a timeout.
He called the timeout before on the foul shot.
He did. We had three timeouts left, and I figure, hey, okay, you want to get a good shot. We're only down by one. I can understand if we were down by two possessions. Okay, yeah, don't call timeout, whatever. But you're down by 1 point, which means you don't even need a three. So in my opinion, Roy's going to call timeout. He's going to set his best play as opposed to what happened, which was – an off-balance three-pointer by Kobe White, who was not having the best percentage shooting last night. You know what I mean? So I was kind of shocked that happened.
Yeah. That was disappointing. I agree with you. The first 18 minutes of that game, I mean, again, when I say a joy to watch, that was real basketball. Because mm-hmm. the way when the heels are on and they're moving the ball, it is poetry in motion.
They got away from it.
I'm going to use that. Yeah. It was gorgeous. But maybe did Duke make an adjustment to stop that? I mean, you know, I wasn't really looking at that. But I'm starting to think maybe they made some sort of adjustment because Carolina changed their game. I mean, the passing was spectacular for the first 18 minutes.
I don't think that Carolina I don't think Duke changed Carolina's game. I think Carolina kind of got in their own heads and changed mm-hmm. their own game. I think Rod kind of mentioned it just a second ago because they went from I texted you guys. I texted you guys in the first half. What did I say? I said they are going to run these boys out of the building. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. because the way they were playing the first half, I was like, this is the same game that they played in Cameron. Like they just run. We're going to run them. And I knew Kay was a little worried about it because he played 9 kids last night.
Yeah.
Like he started playing them early. Like he was trying to make sure guys like Barrett didn't get tired. Mm-hmm. And they still got tired. Like they were still getting tired towards the end. But, man, I think you got to give props to Zion Williamson because without him, Carolina would have made history last night. They would have beat Duke 3 times in a season for the first time in 40-plus years. But Zion willed them, basically. When Carolina was up 15 or whatever it was in the first half, mm-hmm. it was basically Zion Williamson that willed them back because Cam Reddish was on the bench. He had foul trouble. Mm-hmm. R.J. Barrett wasn't doing a whole lot.
They get the ball into Zion. It's going to be 2 points. And what really impresses me about him is those inside moves are so fluid, but it's that second jump he does. He misses rebound. That shot and he's right back up for that rebound.
He's a quick twitch guy. We've mentioned it before. He's like Derrick Rose in the manner where I've said before, he plays violently. And I don't mean that like he's playing like to injure someone. He plays violently like the way he jumps, the way he grabs rebounds. It's all like violent.
Oh, and like,
he snatches things. I don't know.
He is so quick for a guy that size. He's fast.
He's supposed to be a left tackle in the NFL right now.
Did you guys not see when we threw a pass down the way and he sped up and knocked it out of the bounds? I mean, it was like it showed him just go to another
that
gear.
That play, and I instantly thought of LeBron James. I mean, how fast LeBron James is. And then that, I think he only had 1 or 2 steals. He had 6 steals against Syracuse Thursday night. But the one steal against Carolina last night, I think it was in the first half.
It was.
Where the burst that he has is – you don't even know what to say about this kid.
He skied and dunked it. I mean, this guy is showtime, literally.
Let me bring this back around to the original call-in question that I mentioned at the start of the show because I wanted to ask this to both you guys too because now I'm really starting to – people are applying a lot of pressure to this kid. He's very, very good. But we got to be very careful here because it's not like we've never seen this before. We've seen elements of this before. Maybe not in the package that it's in with Zion.
Right, not in a package.
But we can't keep saying that like this has never been seen before because I remember freshman Chris Webber. I remember senior Larry Johnson. Like mm-hmm. I remember these guys, Charles Barkley, like guys that were doing athletic things that no one had seen before. Charles Barkley was 6'4 and weighed almost 300 mm-hmm. pounds, and he was jumping just like this.
He just wasn't as fast,
you know?
And I witnessed Vince Carter.
Vince Carter, yeah. Like these things have happened before. We just haven't seen them all kind of in one player. Mm-hmm. And me and intern Aaron were looking at clips of it was a Larry Johnson highlight reel yesterday on Twitter, and Aaron was like, yo, I never really realized how much he reminds me of Larry Johnson. And I was like, I mentioned that back at the beginning of the year. He reminded me of Larry Johnson. Larry Johnson's junior and senior year at UNLV. If you go and look up Larry Johnson highlight reels on YouTube, you'll swear you're looking at Zion Williamson. Okay. Like the body is built the same way. They were dunking on people the same way. The only difference is that Larry Johnson had a mid-range jumper and Zion does not. Like Zion doesn't have a mid-range right yet. But he doesn't have a broken shot. He just doesn't have that shot yet.
I tell you what, that 3-point shot, he's got a beautiful stroke.
Yeah.
No, it's a set shot, though.
Like it's just a flat. He doesn't jump.
He can do that.
Yeah.
He can learn that and he will use that in the NBA.
Do you think he's going to be a legend? Like, okay, so legend would be like LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. Is he going to get at that status? Is he going to be like an all-star like Blake Griffin, which I'm starting to lean more towards because Blake Griffin was doing this stuff too. People forget this. Blake Griffin in college was Zion Williamson at Oklahoma for the most part. Or is he just going to be a good rotational player? I don't think he'll be a good rotational player. I think he'll be somewhere in between legend and all-star. I'm still concerned about his weight.
I think he'll be fine with his weight. I you know, he's going to handle that. And plus, some of that I don't even want to call it baby fat because he's just, I mean, he's a specimen. But I don't want to say legend yet, but I tell you what, he's leaning toward that. But I will say this, and, you know, this might sound, you know, out of this world. I think he would have been an all-star in the NBA this year.
Eastern Conference? I said that too. Around all-star weekend, I was like, if Zion didn't have to go to college and was in the NBA this year playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers, he would have started for the Eastern Conference all-star team.
He's that
by
good.
By far. Like,
he is
I agree.
That
he is.
Good.
I wanted him. Carolina was on his list. We thought he was going to Carolina when he announced and pulled that Duke hat out of that bag that night. I was at IMG doing a game, watching it, and like my heart sang. I was like, oh, man.
And I'm going to go and say, you know, usually, you know, Duke players, you know, they bug you or whatever if you don't like Duke and all that, you know, their attitudes and this and that. I cannot find one thing I dislike about this kid. I mean, first of all, he goes 150 miles an hour
every
at all
time.
Times,
which all
is,
the time.
Which is fantastic. Yeah. And even his strut, man, that little wobble strut, I just love him, man.
Even when he's being like, I don't even want to call it arrogant, but like even when he's being
gets a little mad,
when he's into himself, like the other night when Duke was playing Syracuse and he had that pass like all the way down the court to RJ for the dunk or whatever, and he was like standing there holding his hand or
that's
whatever,
what
looking
you
at
do.
It.
Yeah,
I like that. I like that kind of pettiness in a player. So I mean, and it ain't even really pettiness; it's just confidence. I guess is a better word to use.
And that's LeBron like. You know, everything. They do is cool, you know, after they do something really good. Like everything LeBron does, you know, his strut and the way he walks around and all that. Zion has that.
He's like LeBron 2.0, kind of. He's the it factor. He's a mix of Blake Griffin and Larry Johnson. If you put them together, the highlight dunks. I hope that he develops a game like Larry did where – he could take you all the way out to the three-point line. You know, like he could shoot mid-range jumpers. He was hitting free throw. I mean, that's really his only weakness is the free throw line, and he doesn't have a mid-range game. Yeah, but once he gets that, I don't know how you guard him.
Yeah, really he'll just have to practice it, really. Yeah. But I think he'll be an all-star for sure. I'm going to be honest with you. I can't wait until he enters the NBA dunk contest.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see what he does
the
there.
The dude that won this year, him and Zion had a high school dunk contest 2 years ago when Zion was a junior. It's online. It's a mixtape or whatever. And the kid beat Zion in the dunk contest. What was the kid's name? Anybody in this production room, remember the kid's name who won the slam dunk contest this year? Diallo. Hamadou Diallo, was that his name?
He went to Kentucky, right?
Yeah, he was supposed to go to Kentucky. Something happened, and I don't think he played college ball at all. I think he ended up waiting a year and going into the draft. But we got one of our regulars on the line, Ed, on the line, wanting to talk a little UNC and Duke from last night. What's going on, Ed? You're on the rundown.
Yeah, guys. I got a couple of scenarios here. Maybe you can help me out. I think in order for the ACC to get three number one seeds, these two things got to happen. Tennessee's got to take care of Kentucky today, and if they don't, hopefully Auburn or Florida will knock them out. And then in the Big Ten, we're going to have a little hope here. Hopefully Wisconsin can take care of Michigan State, and if they don't, then, you know, maybe Michigan will knock Minnesota off and take care of them. And in the second scenario I got, since Gonzaga lost, Virginia lost, Carolina's top three teams, and say if Kentucky lost, if Duke wins, I think they're going to be the number one team. But I don't know if they deserve.
Kentucky would be the number one team?
I don't know if they deserve an ACC or not an ACC, an NCAA number one seed if they don't beat Florida State. Like you guys' opinion on that.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Thanks for the call. Always a good one. I thought that the way Duke would be able to get back onto the one line would be beat Carolina last night, beat Virginia tonight. And then that would be two wins over two top three ranked schools or whatever, and that would put Duke back on the line. And to me, I went into the game last night feeling like we were playing with house money. I feel like UNC already has secured a one seed. They have more quad one wins than almost any other school in consideration. They have 10. They've beat Gonzaga. They beat Duke twice. They beat the brakes off of Virginia Tech, who was ranked in the top 10 at the time. They beat Florida State, beat them down too.
And we've had the hardest schedule.
We've had the hardest schedule out of the ones considered. They were ACC co-regular season champions. Honestly, there was a part of me that didn't want Carolina to win the ACC tournament in the first place, because the past three times we won the national championship, we didn't win the ACC tournament. Like we lost early and then went to the tournament. And Rod mentioned that, I think, last week, that you weren't really –
I was kind of hoping they beat Duke and then lose in the championship round.
Right.
But even then, it's like you're still going the full 3 days. So it's like I woke up this morning okay. You know, like I'm cool. I'm fine.
I'm with you on it. I think Carolina has will be a number one seed.
I
think Duke is a definite number one seed now. And I think there might be a surprise. Virginia might get knocked out of one of those number one seeds. I mean,
they
there is a possibility.
They've only lost three games, though.
Two to Duke. That puts Duke automatically as a number one.
Duke's probably going to win the ACC tournament.
I wouldn't look past Florida State.
FSU is playing great
basketball. Florida State could get to the Final Four.
Just this tournament. I mean, their past month and a half, FSU has looked like they were supposed to look at the beginning of the season.
The only team that's really put it to Florida State the past month, like you said, was UNC. Carolina. I think they went to Tallahassee. No, I think they came up here and Carolina beat Florida State.
Carolina, going
into last night's game, there was not a team to me in the country that was playing as well as Carolina over the past month.
Right.
Not Gonzaga, not Duke, not Virginia. I mean, if you look at that whole month, the only loss they had really was to Virginia.
Yeah.
And in that game, they were up 8 points before Cam Johnson rolled an ankle in the second half, and they lost that lead.
And Nasir Little went out of that game, too.
Yeah, he was banged up that whole stretch. He had a bruised sternum, got poked in the eye at Wake Forest. Leaky Black twisted his ankle in that game, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, let's go to Virginia, Florida State real quick. I'm trying to avoid mentioning Frank Howard to Johnny O, but I probably should because it's happened a couple days now. I want to get his opinion on it as a Syracuse fan. Your boy tripped. He tried to trip Zion. Okay. He tried.
All right, but I mean, really, I want you guys to look at the video, and I'm not going to stick up for him. He picked up his foot.
His toes are
pointing
upward.
A guy right next to him. It was pretty. It was a bang bang type thing.
Barrett was standing there. Yeah,
and he did reach out to him. I did like the reach out. But I think it should just be forgotten. I think it did get caught on TV. I hate that Frank Howard did that. I do disagree with Boeheim saying, oh, what do you mean? That wasn't a trip.
That's
now,
the part
it was
that
a little
I was upset
bit,
about.
Okay?
Yeah.
But you know what?
I mean, we all saw it, Jimmy.
Wipe our hands of it because no big deal. It's the first time. And he didn't go down.
That's the thing.
You can't knock him down anyway.
I don't even think Zion knew he was trying. Someone was trying to trip him. Like he ran through the trip, and like he didn't even look back to see who was trying. Like that was the crazy thing to me. That it didn't even look like it fazed Zion at all.
It didn't because you trip up a lot in basketball because you get tangled up with other guys. And I think that's what he thought it was. It was just a little bit of a tangle up. But he did raise his foot. His heel was still on the ground. But he raised his foot for that little
But
trip.
It was really strategic and cool the way he did it because even when he did it, he was kind of gradually behind another Duke player.
Yeah, he tried to almost hide behind another Duke guy.
So Zion may have even thought that he tripped over his own player,
That could be.
And the other thing is this. Look, a lot of people said Frank should be suspended.
No way in the world.
Grayson Allen used to trip people all the time.
He did it three times.
And Coach K suspended him on a third time when he did it to the guy from Elon.
He defended him every single time.
He sure did. Yep. So I don't want to hear it. Duke got a little bit of their own medicine. Mm-hmm. Granted, now don't get me wrong. He did stick
Nobody
his
wanted
foot
to see
out.
Zion get hurt or anything like that.
We didn't want to see him get hurt. And we say things like that. You know, we say, it'd be nice if he got hurt. Oh, it'd be nice if someone taps him in the knee when he's jogging down there. But we don't really want that to happen. No. You know what I mean?
No. Real quick, guys. Virginia, Florida State from last night. Florida State controlled that game from beginning to end. Like that was the worst Virginia's looked all
bell
year.
Bell.
I think they did too. Florida State's so long. Like they've got like 2 7-foot guys
good.
And they don't have one single guy you got to stop. It could like Leonard Hamilton was saying the other night, it can be you never know who the leading scorer is going to be.
Yeah.
Are they a dark horse to get to the Final Four?
Yes.
What do you think they're going to be seeded?
I'll tell you
what.
They
might get a three.
I think they'll be three.
And this is not talking crazy at all. That Final Four last night could very well be a Final Four.
You mentioned that. And I started thinking about it. I was like, you know what?
If all three are number one seeds, and then FSU's and
like
some
two
other.
Two or three. And they probably would put Florida State in the region that the other three are one out of it. Like So they would be all separated
It could very
out.
Well be a Final Four. There's no doubt in my mind.
That would be insane.
Because I've been watching FSU. I am impressed, really over the past 6-7 weeks. I kept watching. I'm like,
what do you think, athletic
and good and long.
They're
like
very long.
Saying.
They're going to give Duke problems tonight. They are going to really bother them.
They're
playing three straight days. You know, it's a different game tonight. And I think FSU, with the athletes that they have, might take advantage of that in some way.
I expect FSU to win tonight, just because when you when you play this Carolina Duke game the third time, like emotionally, you're just going through so much, and like Duke had to pull deep to like catch back up to Carolina. I mean, they were down 15 points in the first half. They had to dig deep. You had Jordan Goldwater out there cramping up. I'm still upset that Coby White didn't recognize that and thumped the ball into Cameron Johnson, who was on him and had about a 5-inch height advantage. But he was cramping up. You had Vrankovic was out there because Reddish was in foul trouble. He did a good job. Yeah, he did. But
he
I
a
mean,
couple blocks.
But you know it was eating K up to have to go 9 players deep.
Yep.
Just to battle them. And they're going to have to do the same thing with Florida State because Florida State goes 10 deep too, just like Carolina does. And they're taller. They're bigger. They're almost, I'd say they're more athletic than Carolina is as a whole for a team.
Think about this, the Syracuse game. When Zion, which, you know, I mean, he had 29 points, 14 rebounds or whatever. When Zion slowed down, Syracuse caught right up, tied the damn game at 46-46, and, you know, they came back. Yesterday, each time Zion wasn't doing anything, Carolina would pull ahead, blah, blah, and then all of a sudden he just kicks it in. How do you stop this man? How does FSU stop him? Now, they do have a couple bigs. That one guy looks like he's like 7'4".
Oh, yeah, he's tall. Like
can that,
but he can't be flat-footed. That's the key because Zion can move laterally
Don't
so
get in
well.
The air. You have to just stand your ground and keep your arms up. But the problem is when you get in the air, Zion can get up in the air, back down, and back up again before you're coming down.
Quickest
and like,
second jump.
Yeah, quickest seen. I've seen probably since Larry Johnson.
Wow.
We got to take a quick break. But when we come back, like I said, this is a loaded show today. Haskell Shelton from SportsCarolinaMonthly.com will be in the second hour. We're going to do a little barbershop talk. There has been a lot of talk about Power 5 conferences versus mid-majors this week when it comes to the NCAA tournament. Should the NCAA tweak the madness, meaning should they expand the tourney beyond 68 teams to allow quality mid-majors like a UNCG or a Davidson a chance to be an at-large team, or do we have too many teams already? 336-777-1600 is the number to call. Hit us up on Twitter at Sports Hub Triad. We will answer your comments there. Barbershop Talk, next on The Rundown.
Clap your hands and stomp your feet.
Yeah!
It's going to be one big party.
Yeah, I'm on.
Back to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
Barbershop Talk brought to you by Havoline Express Lube of Kernersville. Their service facility is independently owned and operated by Mac Allen, providing full service repair and maintenance services. They use the latest diagnostic equipment to guarantee your vehicle is repaired or serviced properly and in a timely fashion. Mac and his team pride themselves on commitment to the local community and providing value-driven service in an inviting, friendly environment. Go see Mac at Havoline Express Lube of Kernersville for all of your automotive maintenance needs. This is The Rundown. I am your host, Desmond Johnson. Johnny O, Rod Funderburk in the house. Haskell Shelton will be driving by here in about 30 minutes. Intern Aaron and Sawyer Dillon in the house in the control room. 336-777-1600 is the number to call or hit us up on Twitter at Sports Hub Triad. We will get to our poll results here in a little bit, probably after this segment's done. Let me paint this picture for you guys. And then we'll kind of get into this. So you guys know I am UNCG alumni. I am Spartan Pride, graduated in 2003.
Go Spartans.
They are 28-6 on the season with losses at Kentucky and at LSU, two teams that will be probably either one or two seeds in the tourney, although LSU losing to Tennessee or to who did LSU Florida yesterday might have knocked them off the two line. So we'll find out tomorrow about that. UNCG is ranked 60th in the NCAA's net rankings. Their biggest win is against Furman in the SoCon tourney last week and against East Tennessee State, both teams that are in their conference. The SoCon is ranked as the 10th toughest conference in the country. Currently, ESPN's Joe Lunardi has the Spartans in the next four out, primarily due to a lack of big wins and a strength of schedule that ranks in the 100s. Meanwhile, NC State from the ACC is 22-11. They finished at 500 in the ACC, which is considered the toughest conference in the country. They have wins over solid March teams like Auburn and Syracuse, but they also have horrible losses to Wake Forest. They scored 24 points in regulation in a loss to Virginia Tech, and then the very next game allowed 113 points in the next game to UNC. State is currently showing as the last four in. 2 years ago, UNCG beat NC State. NC State will more than likely get into the dance. UNCG will more than likely not make it. Should the NCAA look at expanding the tournament field beyond 68 teams to allow teams like UNCG a chance, or are there too many teams in the field already? And I will dump that in your laps to dissect and discuss.
Well, I'll just say real quick, you know, 68 teams, you know, it's such a great tournament. They already expanded it, what, four? Yeah. It used to be 64 or whatever. Well, way back when, it was 32.
Right.
I don't know if I want more teams in. You know, this is the fun of this whole tournament is, you know, should UNCG be in? Should this happen? Should that? You know, and I know when they get left out because I, you know, as a Syracuse fan, we've been left out a couple times that we thought we should have been in. I say keep it at 68. And I do love the mid-majors, though. And I would love to see UNCG get in. But, you know, the way they look at it, you know, I mean, these top five conferences are so good. And so, you know, an NC State, you know, at 9-9, you know, I've always said in my head, if you go 500 in the ACC during the season, you should probably be in the tournament.
That's kind of been the general gist of what people have been thinking. If you get to 500, then you're probably going to get in. But
then you mention they scored 24 points in one game.
At home, I
still can't even.
That was at PNC. That was at home in Raleigh. Yeah, they crazy. Scored 24 points against Virginia
that
Tech.
That is nuts. I'll never forget that because I was out on a golf course and I was checking my app to see what the score was, and I just figured my app wasn't working. It wasn't downloading or something.
Yeah, that was over Super Bowl weekend. I remember that.
Yeah.
And then the very next game, they let the Tar Heels run 113 points on them. So I mean, that just.
But that was the Tar Heels. You can understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, let's look at some of this history. And, Johnny, you mentioned it just a little bit before. Back in 1937, for the listeners who don't know this, there were only 8 teams that actually competed in the NCAA tournament. Okay? So then as the years went along, we went to 1939, and it grew to 16 teams. And then from 1951 to 1952, you know, it grew to 22 to 25 teams. And then in 1974, 75 is when it went to 64 teams. Excuse me, 32 teams in 75, 64. And then in 85 is when it grew to 64 teams. And then just recently, 2011, excuse me, we went to 68 teams.
And so, that 32 team, when it was 32 teams, you had to win your conference tournament.
That's what I was going to say. It was only conference champions.
Period. Exactly. That's period. It. And that's kind of cool. I mean,
I like that. Yeah. That's crazy. I definitely like that.
And that's how you get some teams in the early 80s in the ACC that didn't even get it. Like Virginia, there was a couple times where they lost in the ACC final. Maryland. Yeah. There was some Duke teams, some Carolina teams.
You talk about fighting to get into a tournament. That's unbelievable. Yeah. But then the NCAA said, they started seeing dollar signs, and they said, wait a minute. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. But that is usually the key, those dollar signs. And my thing is, I look at it kind of like football. How many times during the football season have we seen an undefeated TCU team be right there at number 6 or number 7? And the question goes back to, well, who did you play?
Right.
Who was on your schedule?
Who did you play?
Who did you beat? You know what I mean? So don't get me wrong. UNCG, I think they've had a great season. They have done great. But are they going to be one of the teams in the Final Four?
No.
I mean, so if they're not and you're left out, you know, maybe you have a better chance to win an NIT, which, by the way,
would be great. For
yes,
the program.
It would be great. And which I don't know whether or not you guys knew this. The NIT was the forerunner of the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
The NCAA tournament used to take a back seat to the NIT.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
That's actually the only time Carolina and Duke have met in the postseason was in the NIT. That's
and right. And those years were in the 60s, I think, right? And when the NIT was the big tournament?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that sounds right. Uh-huh.
I mean, I know that's whenever I hear that, and they'll bring that up once in a while. You know, that is
because they always used to play at Madison Square Garden in New York. You're right.
I'm looking at Joe Lunardi's bracketology on ESPN, and I chose to go to Joe Lunardi because more often than not, regardless if you like him or not, he's right. He had a year where he picked all 68 teams correctly. So I'm not going to go to Jerry Palm or any of these other guys that have got random brackets out that have UNCG in them. Just because UNCG is in there. I'm looking at his because his is the most accurate, and it has been for years. His last four buys are Oklahoma, Arizona State, Florida, and Ohio State. Florida was on the bubble and moved up into those last four buys. So they're in there. Ohio State won yesterday. They moved up. They're in there. Yeah. The last four in, he has is Temple, St. John's, NC State, and TCU.
First, I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that, too.
Especially St. John's.
Yeah,
St. John's is a pretty good team. Mm-hmm. Man.
First four out, he has Belmont, Texas, Indiana, and Alabama. Indiana is an interesting case because they're like, what, like
18 and 16?
Something like that, seven, yeah.
Yeah, but
they swept Michigan State.
Some big wins.
Yeah, they got some big wins, but I don't think they deserve to be in. Like, if they get in, I think they would have the most losses of any at-large team. They'd have like 15 losses or something.
And
crazy.
They got beat in the tournament, early in the tournament.
Yeah.
They needed at least a win or two in there.
Belmont's interesting. And
well,
Belmont's
again,
the first mid-major.
They beat Michigan State.
They swept Michigan State. They beat them twice. Belmont is in the first four out, and they're the first mid-major that pops up there. And they're ahead of UNCG on this. His next four outs where UNCG pops up: Clemson, Lipscomb, UNC Greensboro, and Furman. So here's my thing for, and again, I am Spartan alumni. Jay Billis made an excellent point last night on the broadcast for Carolina and Duke, where he was talking about bubble teams, and he was saying, you know, once you're on the bubble, if you don't have any more games to play, you don't go up on the bubble. Like, you won't find a team that gets elevated after their games are done. Usually you go down because other teams are playing, yeah, and they're pushing you downward, and that's kind of what's happening here, because I thought 2 days ago UNC Greensboro was like the first out of the next four out, and now Clemson is there, and now Lipscomb is there, and Clemson lost that game to NC State in the quarterfinals of the ACC tournament, and Clemson beat Syracuse. Clemson's got a couple of wins too, but I don't think Clemson deserved to go.
Yeah, I don't think they deserve.
I don't
to
think
go
NC
either.
State deserves to go, to be honest. But it looks
but
like they might get in.
It's a weak field this year. It really is. There's some, you know, like the Pac-12 is only going to get two teams, and you know, I mean, well, that now the SEC is getting like eight teams.
I'm looking. Yeah, he's got a rundown of like conferences too. Big Ten, he's got eight. ACC, eight. Who the eight for the ACC that he's got going in here? Hold on,
everybody, but Clemson.
Looks, yeah, Virginia, Carolina, yeah. Duke, Florida State, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Louisville, NC State.
NC State.
Yep.
That sounds right. I mean, that sounds right. And Clemson's the cutoff. After that, you get into Georgia Tech and Boston College and all that kind of stuff.
And although NC State had one of the, you know, worst schedules or lightest schedules, if not the lightest schedule this year.
They had the lowest ranked non-conference strength of schedule.
Exactly. Their schedule was the lightest non-conference.
Yeah.
And, you know, but if you look at their record on paper looks pretty good.
Yeah,
they're like
good.
22 and something.
And 11, I guess.
Yeah, which looks fairly decent, which put them at, I think, the number 33 team in the bracket.
I did see that. Yeah, they're up there.
Our buddy, buddy Haskell Shelton must be driving and texting, because he sent me this photo of conference rankings, and they've got the Big 12 ranked number. Who is this? WarrenNolan.com. I'm not sure who this guy is, but he's ranked the conferences. He's got Big 12 at number one, Big 10 at two, SEC at three, Big East at four, and the ACC at five.
Well, obviously he's on drugs.
Yeah, apparently this guy is drinking.
Who is this guy?
Warren Nolan, whoever this is.
I mean, the ACC is five.
Three teams in the top five. the top five has been the ACC all year, pretty much.
Oh.
And okay. 336-777-1600 is the number to call if you want to chime in on what we're discussing here. Back to the original question, though, I think 68 might be too many. I mean, 64 was almost the perfect bracket. Like, it lasts 3 weeks. You get, you know, the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament is one of the best weekends to me in sports, especially that opening day, that Thursday, Friday.
See, you said opening day, Thursday, Friday, but they had the play-in games Tuesday,
Wednesday. I don't even count them. Yeah. I don't even count the play-in games,
because
I never really watch them.
Well,
and like, it's
Syracuse
all,
was in the play-in
I know.
And they went to the Sweet 16.
Isn't there some kind of crazy stat? Actually, I need some help in the production room on this. Isn't there some kind of crazy stat in terms of teams getting out of that Tuesday, Wednesday play-in game and making it to the Elite Eight or the Final Four or something the past couple of years? Because Syracuse did it.
Yeah.
Well, the year Syracuse went to the Final Four, did they start off in those?
Okay. No.
But last year, they went a little
last
bit.
Year,
right?
To the 16. They went to the Sweet 16.
The year before that, there was a team that got far out of there.
I can't remember who it was.
Did Loyola Chicago come out of there? They didn't come out of there, did they? See, that's why
they did not come out of there.
They're working on it, trying to figure it out.
No, they were a straight up 16 seed, I believe they were.
I don't even know how you look that up, but it's like, what's the I guess the play-in games, the record of the play-in game teams?
I'm trying to word it. I worded it one way and it didn't really work. So
yeah.
I think of another way to
you guys.
It.
Well, you guys are college
those,
educated and smart. They'll figure it out.
Those play-in games.
Yeah.
Those play-in games go back to what you guys were talking about earlier. It's the money. Those dollars that are generated on TV.
Yep, saw it,
TV the NCAA money. Is generating a good bit of television revenue on Tuesday and Wednesday.
2 days before the whole tournament
2 days
starts.
Before the whole tournament starts. So, you know, whenever there's dollar signs in the picture, I mean, you can best believe they're not going to retract just because of that.
They could maybe go to 72 if they wanted to. But like I said, I'm happy with it being right now at 68. That might be the limit of what you can do.
They don't need to go any further.
Because if they go to 72, the 73rd team is
it's
still
always
going to
be a team. Yeah. So, like, according to this, if they went to 72, it'd be like it'd be UNCG. be UNCG like, oh, well, we didn't get in. We're the 73rd team or whatever. And it's like, well, eventually, you got to get to a point where it's like Gonzaga. Gonzaga's been pretty much on the main stage for about 20 years now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But people forget before they got there, before Mark Few had built this up, they were UNCG. They were these mid-major schools. They were Furman. They were Wofford. You know, they had to win some major games against Power 5 schools over that period and sustain the excellence over years to get over that stigma of them being a mid-major. And now no one calls them a mid-major anymore. They're considered a big boy. Mm-hmm.
Two things. Wes Miller could do that. I'm serious. Oh, yeah. I love the way he coaches. Oh, yeah. He's in the style he has. And back to mid-majors, when I watched the Wofford UNCG game the other night, you know, that championship game, I actually said to myself, I actually texted my brother Rick too. I said, you know, I'm watching this mid-major game. This is damn good.
They're good.
Basketball.
They're really
good.
Yeah.
I mean, instead of watching all these one and duns, and you know, I watch that as well, and I enjoy it, but it's a whole different brand of basketball. But it's real basketball. These guys are good.
They all know each other. They've been playing with each other for 3-4 years. And Wofford, I think Wofford is on that path that Gonzaga was on 20 years ago.
Yeah, they are.
And a lot of it started from them beating Carolina in the Dean Dome last year. Yeah, Carolina coming off a national championship. Nobody knew who Wofford was. And Wofford comes in there and beats them. And ever since they beat Carolina, Wofford's been kind of like out there on the fringe. Like, if you say Wofford, people kind of recognize them. Mm-hmm. And then this year, they win 28 games too. They win the Southern Conference. They blew out UNC Greensboro twice, by one by 30 and one by like 29 or something like
Until that championship game. And then Wes Miller made an adjustment. A coach that makes adjustments is kind of nice, because I'm not saying anything against my Hall of Fame coach or your Hall of Fame coach, but sometimes they're so stubborn, not calling a timeout.
That's right.
That they just go with it. But you know, that's why they're at the top.
Listen, I'd like to give a shout out to a team.
Sure,
Gardner Webb.
Yes, congratulations to Gardner Webb.
Absolutely.
Win your conference.
Yeah.
If that's the situation that's put, the hand that's dealt to you. Win your conference, and you don't have to worry about whether or not, you know, are they going to let us in as an at-large or whatever, until you've built that resume up where you don't have to worry about that going forward. Now, maybe UNC Greensboro will be able to get some Division I. Maybe they can get Wake Forest in there and play them. Maybe they can, you know, they played Carolina back in the day. I don't know if they got that series going still, but they've played Carolina. I went to that game 2 or 3 years ago where it was UNCG versus Carolina in the Coliseum. Get Duke on the resume. I mean,
and they've had them on there.
They've had them on there.
I remember going to Cameron for the UNCG Duke game. But and they, like you said, they beat NC State.
Year before last, they beat NC State. I think it was at PNC. So I mean, you just got to keep scheduling them. I understand sometimes Power Fives don't want to schedule mid majors because there's not a lot of benefit for them to play them. Yeah. But for a mid major, it can change your program.
It really can, and it also allows those recruits who are just right there on that tier from going to a D1 school. You can tell them, hey, that Duke team that didn't want you, that Carolina team that didn't want you, that NC State team that didn't want you. We got them on schedule. Let's go beat them.
Look, Wes Miller's got a class coming in next year. The Langley twins from Southwest Guilford that just went undefeated and won the state championship. He's got a kid coming in from California. He said he really loves the class he's got coming in. And we're going to talk about Wes Miller and maybe his future a little bit later on in the show. But if I'm UNCG, I'm pulling up a Brinks truck to try to keep this guy here as long as I can. Because you don't have a football team to contend with at UNCG. I mean, you are the team at UNCG. Yeah. Everyone's going to follow.
Good point.
Let's take a quick break.
So, what was the question one more time?
Should the field expand beyond 68 teams?
And what were we looking up? Was for the longest play-in team run?
What's the furthest a play-in team has gotten in the NCAA tournament since it began?
I don't even think it's been a Sweet 16.
Really?
Syracuse went
to the Sweet 16 last year, and they were in the play-in game.
Were they? What seed were they?
Okay, so that's the key, and that's what I want to mention.
I think the
these
12
play-in
seeds
games
and
are 11 seeds playing each other and two 16 seeds. Everyone thinks they're all 16 seeds.
No, they're not. Yeah, that's right. So it's like the two bottom, basically the last four in. So actually, it might be NC State in the play-in game coming up this year. It'd be NC State and TCU, according to Joe Lunardi.
And they would be like 11 seeds.
Yeah, they'd be like 11 or 12 seeds. And then there's the two 16s.
It was difficult to figure out because when you type it in, they just want to tell you like, the highest seed, so it's like you can't really find that middle mark. I mean, a lot of it was like UMBC beat number one Virginia was like half the articles we could find.
Yeah, that did happen.
Did that happen last year?
That happened in the same building Virginia lost last night, almost a year to the date.
Just because of that game, like every time we talk about Virginia, it's like you can't count Virginia out. Good team, it's like, wait, they lost. First round last year.
I have not trusted Virginia all year. No. I don't know why. I just have not trusted them, and I still don't trust them. I feel like they can have a night just like last night anytime in the next 3 weeks
They might not make it out of the first weekend next weekend. But I will say this. I am officially a Kyle Guy fan now. I'm serious. He is a baller.
Yeah,
man.
I like him. Man, they were in his pocket last night, though. He couldn't get free for anything. Yeah. He was struggling for everything. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to take a further look at bracketology and try to figure out how many teams the ACC will get in. Is there a path for 3-1 seeds from the same conference plus – is there a dark horse team out there that we've all ignored that can win the whole thing? March Madness starting tomorrow. We'll get you ready next on The Rundown.
Okay, let's go.
You're listening to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
Quick reads here for you for the latest coverage of ACC sports, Panthers, Hornets, high school, NASCAR, and much more. Visit SportsCarolinaMonthly.com for coverage of your favorite local teams, mid-majors, exclusive stories from our staff of writers, audio and video content, plus much, much more. SportsCarolinaMonthly.com, your source for Carolina sports. Follow us on Twitter at SportsCarolina1 or on Facebook at Facebook.com/SportsCarolinaMonthly, and don't miss news daily. That's SportsCarolinaMonthly.com. I do need to mention to you also, we have a bracket challenge here at WSJS, the Sports Hub. Do you have what it takes to compete against your fellow Sports Hub listeners for the best bracket in town? Sign up for our bracket challenge. The winning bracket will get a day out with David Glenn and Josh Graham. They'll take you to a Winston-Salem Dash game to hang out at the Flow Club. That includes food, free parking, and more. If you've never been to the Flow Club before at the Dash, it is fantastic. You will leave full. It's like a buffet-style type
it's
thing
excellent.
With great
it really
food.
Is.
They'll have like prime rib and like all kinds of nonsense.
They
in there.
Carved turkey.
Yeah. It's nice. Great. Good. Yeah. So you'll get all that plus hanging out with DG and Josh. Brackets open tomorrow. You can sign up now. Test your bracket skills against Josh Graham, Johnny O, Rod, myself, and more from the station and from people around the triad. Go to sportshubtriad.com, click on the banner for the bracket contest, and you can go ahead and sign up. It'll send you a notification to go in and do your brackets after they are announced tomorrow night after 6 o'clock. Should the ACC receive 3-1 seeds? The one seeds right now in Joe Lunardi's bracketology after last night's events, he has Virginia, Gonzaga, Duke, and Kentucky. And to be honest, it looks like he's got Virginia as the number one overall. And Gonzaga is the second one because they're both playing play-in game winners. Then he has Kentucky and Duke on the one line. I have to think that Duke being back on the one line is the Zion effect. I mean, just from beating Carolina last night, that pushed them back up. Carolina has dropped to a 2 seed. To be honest with you, there's not much difference between a 1 and a 2.
No.
Looking at some of these brackets. But he's got North Carolina in the Midwest with Kentucky as the 1. He's got Syracuse and Baylor, actually, as the 8-9. Yeah. So it would be Kentucky versus Syracuse, possibly, in the second round. Virginia Tech is in – good Lord. Virginia Tech is in that in that bracket, too. Florida's in there. Buffalo's actually a pretty good team.
Look out for Buffalo.
Yeah.
They're pretty good. You know, they almost lost to Central Michigan the other night.
Yeah, I know. They struggled, but they won it, and they're
– I was kind of like pulling 30. For Central Michigan.
What's the path for 3-1 seeds for the ACC? To me, it looks like it's going to come down to Kentucky and Tennessee today.
It does.
If Tennessee beats Kentucky, then
Tennessee will beat them. That's in the semifinals of the SEC.
So basically, I think Ed mentioned this in the first segment. Tennessee has to beat Kentucky, And then Duke would probably have to beat Florida State right. today, although they're already on the one line right now. So I don't know if losing to Florida State today would actually hurt them or not. It may push Florida State up higher, and I'm trying to find them. They're a four seed in the West right now.
But I think it comes down to I think Gonzaga's in, Virginia's in, and I hate to question it, but I'm still questioning Virginia. Duke is in, and it comes down to what you're saying, either Carolina or Kentucky. And if Kentucky loses today, now Tennessee beats Kentucky, and then Tennessee wins the SEC. What about Tennessee, who's had a hell of a year this year?
It would have helped Tennessee's case if LSU had not lost and they played LSU in the SEC final instead of Florida, maybe, or whoever's going to end up being.
I think gonna be Florida.
Man, yeah, I have to be honest with you. I don't mind seeing Carolina get a number two seed.
It doesn't really bother me.
I think that may create a little chip, too, as in, hey, we're being overlooked.
Yeah.
And that might be what Carolina needs to get over the hump in this particular tournament for 2019.
And they have been kind of over. I mean, they are the most underrated third-ranked team in the country in March that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Like that. I mean.
And I can live with that.
I'm fine with that. Actually, I like playing on the radar a little bit.
I agree with you. I've never seen – I've always said between a one and a two seed, there isn't much – I mean, obviously, there's not much difference. And,
right.
You know, even throughout the whole bracket,
yeah,
nothing wrong with
being I think the difference maybe comes in what region that we go to.
They have them going Midwest because Midwest, Duke would be number one in the South. You know they're not going to put them in the same bracket. Yep. Virginia would be number one in the East, and you know they're not going to put Carolina in that bracket as the two. They probably want to avoid putting Gonzaga and Carolina in the same bracket out west. They got Michigan as the two seed out west. They got Wofford out west, too. Wofford is one of those teams that I'm kind of looking at. They have them as a seven seed. And I'm like, actually, I think Wofford could have been a six. And I'm kind of leaning towards pushing Wofford, at least to my Sweet 16, because I think Wofford could beat a Michigan. I think they can beat an LSU. I think they can beat an Ohio State or an Iowa State. Like, they – I don't have any reason to suggest they can't beat them. I've seen them play a couple of times over the past 2 years, and they're really good. Wofford is a damn good team. I mean, yes, 28 wins.
No, they're real. That is a definite great team. You know, back to Syracuse, I hate that 8-9 seed because then we have to – if we win, we play the number one seed.
And they got
would rather have a 10 or 11 seed, for crying out loud.
I think Bill said that last night, too. Yeah. It's almost better to have a 7 or a 10 than that 8-9.
Absolutely.
They would have Syracuse playing Baylor first round, and then the winner would more than likely get Kentucky. You know what? The one seed out of all these I don't trust the most is Gonzaga. Because if you really look at – Gonzaga plays in the weakest conference out of all the one seeds we're talking about. They lost to Carolina.
They lost to St. Mary's.
They lost to Tennessee.
They scored 47 points against St. Mary's.
Yeah.
Man, I can't believe
that. Was their
that.
Worst game all year.
Yeah.
And then they beat Duke with Zion. Everyone's like, that's the only team that we've lost to at full strength or whatever. But that was back in November at the Maui.
I don't trust Virginia. I don't.
I mean, don't trust them either.
I, for whatever reason, going through my head right now, they might not get out of the second or out of the first weekend.
No, they make it to the Sweet 16.
They've got them playing a play-in game against either North Dakota State or Norfolk State.
They're not going to lose that.
Well,
no, they're not.
They shouldn't. No. And then they would play probably either Iowa or Ole Miss as the 8-9 over there. Then after that, you got Villanova, Liberty, Kansas State, Vermont is in that second pot underneath them. The path is set up where Virginia is the overall one, and they've got the easiest bracket. They got Tennessee as their two seed, and they've got Louisville over there. Purdue. I don't see any team over there should give Virginia problems, but again, it was like that last year in the bracket they had. They were overall one seed last year, and they had like one loss going into the tournament, and you saw what happened. They seem like they're built on three-point shooting and Kyle Guy being able to hit those shots, but if the other guys can't hit, they can muck it down and play defense and get it like in the 40s and stuff. We've seen that happen before, but you get a team like last night, Florida State can just bully them.
Mm-hmm.
Florida State showed what to do against Virginia. They pulled them out and played one-on-one with them instead of letting them set up their pack line defense. They were taking turns at the top of the key playing one-on-one on whoever was guarding them and just getting into the paint and either kicking it out or shooting a little mid-range right around the free throw line. And it worked all night. Like, Virginia could not figure out how to stop it. So, I mean, they got some kinks in their armor for sure.
Did you notice I didn't mention that we were without Tyus Battle, our first round draft pick?
You were without your best player.
Our best scorer.
You should go
best player.
And get an asterisk. Absolutely. And put it beside that loss.
But now, you know, it lit. I mean, Buddy Boeheim looked like a basketball player.
He did. He looked great.
Looks good.
And he can play, obviously. And Frank Howard finally kicked it into gear because he can actually play when he needs to.
He's the one who kept you guys
back
in the
battle's
game.
Battle's coming back to the NCAA. Okay. So now, you know, now we need more scoring. I think that might have helped. So we'll see what happens.
Does Gonzaga deserve a one seed?
I think you got to give it to them. I really do. I mean, I know they're out west and all that. We don't see them play a lot. But, yeah, because they were right near the top all year long. So was Tennessee, though.
Yeah, Tennessee was. They had a hot stretch where they were number one in the country for a while, and they lost to Kentucky. I don't know.
Does Tennessee get a consideration if they win the SEC by beating Kentucky and then whoever?
I think you have to consider them. I don't know if they get it. See, again, that comes back down to – I think that would come down to Tennessee or Carolina. I think Carolina's the top two that's sitting in here. It's Tennessee, it's just Michigan, Carolina, and Michigan State.
But then it's strictly an eye test for the committee on that.
Michigan State could get up there.
Let's say Tennessee, it comes down to Tennessee and Carolina. Mm-hmm. Let's say, you know, when the committee is sitting down like, oh, my gosh, you know, we got Gonzaga, Virginia, Duke. And now who do we pick, Carolina or, you know, Tennessee? I think they would pick Carolina.
Well, I mean, Carolina would go Tennessee.
Carolina has 10 quad one wins. They beat Gonzaga and Duke. No one in the country has a pair of wins like that Carolina has. They've beaten two other one seeds.
Ooh, too bad they didn't beat Virginia. They would have been in like Flynn.
If they had beaten Virginia, then it would have been a no-brainer. I think that's the only thing that's going to prevent them from getting 3-1 seeds.
Yeah, I still think the committee would have an issue given one conference, three number one seeds.
They've only done it twice.
Big East.
Yeah, the Big East did it back in 85, I think it was.
And that was years ago.
That was what, like Villanova, St. John's, and Georgetown, I think it was. Was that the year Villanova? I think it was the year Villanova won. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And then it happened in 2009. The Big East got 3 in again. The one seed that wasn't from the Big East was North Carolina, and they ended up winning the whole thing. They were overall one.
Yep.
If you're picking to win, when you're doing your brackets this weekend, guys, who would you pick to win the NCAA championship this year? A team from the ACC or a team from the field?
Hmm. Well, I mean, if I was picking a team from the ACC, it would not be Duke because I think Duke's going to run out of gas before it's all over with. Yeah, they have Zion. He's the big man. He's the big presence in the middle. But if they run into a team with depth and a great bench, then I think Duke loses.
They got Duke.
On the other hand, from the ACC, I see them getting to the Sweet 16, but as that competition gets stiffer in the NCAA tournament, I don't see Virginia maybe getting past the Sweet 16. Of course, I could be wrong. So if I had to pick someone from the ACC, it would be North Carolina. I like their depth. I like their length. I like their play at point guard. Yeah.
If they're hitting shots, I don't think there's a team in the country that can beat them when they're all locked in. They do one of those things like they did against Virginia Tech when they came out from halftime and went up by 30 or whatever it was.
Right.
Like, that's hard to stop when that avalanche starts. Last night, they couldn't get it started. And with Zion roaming around in the paint, they couldn't get those paint buckets that they were getting before when they scored like 62 buckets in the paint Cameron or whatever. That got stopped because Zion was clogging that up.
Yeah,
so
he's that big presence.
And that turned into 27 three-point attempts.
So to me, the question is, do you go with Carolina or do you go with the field? That was really the question that you asked in my mind.
No,
so like I'm looking
gave you the reasons why I couldn't pick any other ACC team.
Now, I will say this about Duke. I'm a little leery about picking Duke to win the whole thing. But if there's ever a situation in all of sports where one person can put a team on their back and win a championship, it's the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
Hell, we got a guy down the road, Danny Manning, that did it 30 years ago with Kansas. Yep. I can't name a single guy off that Kansas team, but Danny Manning and Larry Brown was the coach.
He threw him on his back, man, and let it roll.
And he went all the way to the final. And they played Oklahoma, a conference foe, in the final and beat them. I'm looking at Duke the way they have him in bracketology. Duke playing Gardner Webb first round. And then
Duke's playing Gardner Webb.
That's what they've got on bracketology here.
Kansas
is in there.
Lenardi picks all the right teams, but
it's never gonna be exactly like that. Yeah. NC State's in the play-in game. Sawyer, you wanted to chime in about Nasir Little?
Yeah, I was just watching the game last night and I don't know. Me and my friends and everyone have been talking about it. I don't know about you guys, but I was super underwhelmed that entire night. It just felt like he was in some right places at the right time, but I mean, he was just getting bodied and just taking dumb decisions and shots and, like, ISOing with a tie game. It was just like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Sawyer, I am happy that you brought that up, seriously, because this kid, I mean, the body on him, the look of him, the way he moves and everything, he looks like he should dominate the basketball game mm-hmm. out there. He has shown, you know, once in a while he'll go and get a couple buckets real quick and go on a spurt, like a 1 minute or 2 minute spurt, but the rest of the game he disappears. It's the most disappointing thing I've ever seen all season long is Nasir Little.
I mean, he got hyped so much because of all of the All-Star games he was in. I mean, everyone was replaying him stealing the ball from Zion in the Jordan Classic, and he was the MVP of the Jordan Brand Classic and the McDonald's All-American game with all those other freshmen out there playing, Cam Reddish and Zion and Barrett and all these kids. He came in kind of with expectations he wasn't going to meet. And to me, it's part of the reason why Zion didn't come to Carolina, because if he had came to Carolina, he would have been fighting for playing time with Luke May, who was a preseason All-American. I know people look at it like, oh, why in the world would he be fighting? Luke May is a senior and a national treasure, okay? He would have been fighting for time with Luke May.
No,
he probably would have started.
No,
Garrison Brooks would have sat, and he would have started.
Right.
But he wouldn't have gotten 35 minutes a game at Carolina. And I think that's part of the reason why he went to Duke. That and their social media department is off the chain. And has ballooned this guy out into this celebrity.
In hindsight, I completely disagree with you. Now, at the beginning of the season, I would have said exactly what you were saying.
I mean, I can't imagine that Roy would just be making him sit just because he's a freshman. Like, I'm not saying he would have done that. But there's too many bodies ahead of him for him to comfortably have been able to just get into a rhythm and play 30, 35, 38 minutes a game. Whereas at Duke, they had like three guys coming back, and that was it. I mean, he was going to be starting. There was no one to fight for his position with. He would have had to do that at another school like Carolina or Kansas.
I remember when we were talking about that on our show.
Yeah.
The day he made his decision, it was going to be later on that day.
That lives in infamy.
yeah.
But no, I mean, I could see Duke winning six straight with Zion and getting all the way to the Final Four.
Absolutely.
I really could. I mean,
and I might go. You were saying Virginia. Once they hit the better teams, they would have difficulty. I'm going to go against that, thinking they might have trouble at the beginning of the tournament because it's going to be in their head about what happened
last year.
That's
going to be interesting to see, yeah.
If they get by the first weekend, I think Virginia now they feel like, you know, they belong and they're there. They will get tougher as the tournament goes on.
They didn't have DeAndre Hunter last year during that game with Maryland-Baltimore County, so people need to remember that. He might be their best NBA prospect.
Yeah,
he's a stud.
And those three guys from he's one of them, I guess. When they're hitting the three pointers,
Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy,
wow,
Hunter can shoot them. Yeah, Virginia's a good team. They're a good team. They're one of those teams that just wins games, and you're like, how do they win that game? Like, they keep winning games in different ways. I could see them there. I don't think Gonzaga is going to make it to the Final Four. I think they're going to be upset somewhere early, probably second weekend somewhere.
My answer is I'd take the ACC.
I think this is the year where ACC team is going to win the national championship. They're just too strong, like, up top.
Because Florida State might even sneak in
Florida
there.
State might get in there,
I mean, they are that good.
It would not shock me.
You watched them yesterday, right?
I did see them yesterday, and I agree with you on their length, their athleticism. I mean, they really look good.
And
yeah,
he plays 10 guys.
They do have a bench.
They were the one team I was worried about as a Carolina fan to face because they're taller than us, and they run the same amount of dudes off the bench. Like, they run 10, 11 deep. And they can shoot, they can drive, they can penetrate, they pass the ball. They're like one of the top defensive teams in the country.
Yep.
And they're one of the top offensive teams in the country. Like, and they don't run like this little small stuff. They attack you like all game.
They are in attack mode all the time. And if they win tonight, now they're on a roll, man. And now they go into the NCAA tournament.
You beat this Duke team with Zion that's proclaimed to be the best thing since sliced bread or whatever, and no one's looking for you to do it. Florida State pulls it off. I think you got to pull Florida State from – they're a four seed in this bracketology. I think you got to put them on the two line.
They would be a two line.
Yeah,
you'd have to
pull
Virginia, then Duke. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And 2 day, like literally a back-to-back type days.
Yep. Yeah, and I don't know if you guys remember when they played Duke earlier in the year, Duke had Zion, everybody. They only lost by 1 point.
Zion didn't play in the second half
because
he got poked
in the eye.
Yeah.
Did he get poked in
the eye?
He sat out the whole second half.
Yeah.
And they held on to win. Cam Reddish should have shot that three at the end to win it or whatever.
Yeah, they lost by one possession. Yeah,
we'll find out tonight tomorrow, because Selection Sunday starts at 6 o'clock, and all of us are going to enter brackets into the thing and see who's who and what's what. I did win my new bet with Josh Graham from yesterday, though. If you were listening to the drive, we bet on Carolina Duke, and he gave me 5.5 for Duke. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, it was funny because we got to take a break. Well, as we were doing it, I was kind of trying to decide if I want it, and Aaron's in my ear like, take it, take it. So we end up taking the bet. And then right in commercial break, I look at my phone, and my dad texted me, and all he had on there was take the bet. So I'm just like, all right, well, if my dad's saying take it.
Because the line was actually 3.5.
Yeah. And ended up covering. So, I mean, so Josh Graham owes me lunch wherever he is wandering around uptown Charlotte right now.
Not that I look at lines or do any of that gambling stuff.
I should have called Johnny O. That's what I should have. Hey, man, he's offered me 5.5. Should I take this? 336-777-1600 is the number to call. Or hit us on Sports Hub Triad. We'll have the results of our Zion Williamson poll on Twitter when we come back. Haskell Shelton from SportsCarolinaMonthly.com in the house. We're going to talk a little Hornet basketball. They were in action last night right here on the Sports Hub versus the Washington Wizards. They were 2 games out of the playoff race when that game began. We'll look at where the Hornets are now in the standings, and we asked the question that Haskell has been screaming from the rooftops all season long. Should the Hornets tank the rest of the season and take their chances in the lottery? Haskell Shelton with the panel joins us for the second hour. We catch up on the NBA next on the Rundown.
What's up, dog?
Think about it.
A party?
Are we having a party? Yeah!
Back to the Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
Hornets' remaining entire season will be broadcasted by Sports Hub, including playoffs if they make it in. WSJS Sports Hub, your new exclusive home for Charlotte Hornets basketball. The Hornets take on... That's not right. I want to say it's the Heat. I think they're playing Dwayne Wade at the Heat tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m. right here on the Sports Hub. The Hornets and the Wizards played last night, and I am trying to pull up their stats. Haskell Shelton in the house here with us. You're listening to The Rundown. Desmond Johnson, Johnny O, Rod Funderburk in the house. Before we do that, actually, intern Aaron, can you give us an update on the poll that was on Twitter between our question about Zion Williamson? What will he end up being in the NBA, a legend, an all-star, or a rotational player?
Yes, of course, according to our listening public, 67% believe that Zion Williamson will wind up an all-star, as opposed to 33% believe he'll wind up a legend. Nobody seems to think he'll make a good rotational play.
surprise.
Yeah, it's a shock to me. I'm surprised that no one thought that he would just be in the rotation. You know, that sixth guy, that seventh guy, come off the bench, get some buckets, couple rebounds.
Old James Harden.
I'm a little surprised Haskey's here this morning. I mean, my text was beeping until about 3 a.m. this morning, man, on that thread that we have, and I just kept hearing it. I'm looking... And Haskey was still going, man.
I had some opinions.
Haskell Shelton in the house from SportsCarolinaMonthly.com. The Hornets are victorious last night, 116-110 winners over the Washington Wizards. They are now 1 game out of the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference. And I can't decide if I want the Hornets to try to make a run here with about 14 games to go, or if I just want them to just pack it up and try to get up in the lottery. And Haskell had a couple of tweets earlier in the week kind of talking about that very thing. The Hornets are in 10th place. They are 31-37. The Heat are in the 8th seed right now at 32-36. They're literally a game behind the Heat. We had mentioned really it'd be ideal to get up to the 6th seed, which is currently occupied by the Pistons. They're 35-31, so the Hornets are like 4 games back of the 6th. But these other, like the Nets are 36-34 in the 7th seed.
No business. under 500, no business to be in the playoffs.
And I mean, it's going to
be the bottom. If you're asking if they should tank, I thought they'd been tanking all year, for crying out loud.
Dude, they went through that stretch where they just lost games at home. They were 3-7 in their last 10 games. And a lot of those games were at home because they were going to be gone from the ACC tournament this past week. And they lost a lot of games at home they should have won and would have been in a much better position than they are right now. Should the Hornets tank the rest of the season? And I'll ask that to the panel. I don't even know what that means, to tank the rest of the season. Like, how would they even go about doing that? Right. Like, sit in Kemba or just play like the way they've been playing?
Real quick, I just think, I mean, I don't want them to tank. But at this point, I don't want them to get in the playoffs. I mean, I'd like to see them get, I don't know.
They would have to, if they're the eighth seed, they get the great gift of playing the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round, who have the best record in basketball.
So here's the question, ultimately, is what is the upside if the Hornets make the playoffs and lose in the first round versus, and some of my points that Dez is referring to that I was making on Twitter is they're essentially three spots out of the sixth or seventh lottery pick, which at that point you've got, you know, around an 8 to 9% chance of the number one overall pick versus being out of the lottery. And if you look at kind of projections of like NBADraft.net, they're looking at somebody, you know, probably in that 12 to 15 range of like a Nasir Little or somebody who's down there versus having a shot at a top four pick. You've really almost got a double-digit chance of grabbing one of those top four guys off the board. And so to the question about, you know, whether they are tanking or not, they're absolutely not. Miles Bridges played 13 minutes last night. They are going with the A squad. They are clearly trying to make a playoff push here. They are sacrificing a lot of the folks on the message boards, et cetera, sacrificing player development essentially. By playing their best players right now, trying to make a push, and they have been losing, but they played awesome last night.
This is I just went to NBADraft.net to look at the mock drafts. They have Charlotte in the 10th spot, like you were saying, Haskell, and they have him picking Nasir Little.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't have an issue with, actually. I kind of want Charlotte to start picking more of these one-and-done guys
so they can grow with. Like Nasir Little, though, man.
What would he do for the Hornets?
Athleticism, for starters.
Look at him right now.
I'm looking at it long term. So, like, say you drafted Nasir Little, the Hornets first round. For starters, the kid's 19. He's going to grow more into his body. He needs to learn how to play the game. The NBA game is better suited for him because it is more ISO and more matchup related than it is playing in a team type concept. He's 6'6", 220. He plays small forward. You put him out there. You put Miles Bridges at power forward. You put Malik Monk at shooting guard, and you put Kemba Walker at point. And then all you need at that point is to go find you a center. Go trade for Andre Drummond or something. That's a four seed in the East in about 2 years. Like, if they get to stay together and play together and run, that's a legit team. And then you fill in the blanks on the bench. You pick up a couple of guys that can shoot and can run. It's basically what Sacramento is doing. Like, I would be fine with it, but I think people are being a little hard on Nasir because – they expect him to have the same pedigree as Zion or R.J. Barrett, or these guys have been playing basketball for 10, 12 years. He just started playing ball like 3 years ago. Like, I mean, he's still learning the basic concepts of basketball.
So he'd be a project.
He'd be a project.
For a few years at the Hornets.
Yeah.
How about someone that – we need someone to step right in. But obviously
– I'm just kind of looking down the list. Yeah.
It's not a loaded draft.
Man,
right?
they got Coby White going to Atlanta at number five.
I saw that.
That is ridiculous. And Atlanta has two picks. They have him picking DeAndre Hunter at six.
Now think about that to Atlanta, and they have
that's Dallas' pick, and it might
be protected.
It's top protected pick.
Yeah, Atlanta's got what's the kid's name?
The point guard. He's doing a hell of a job right
Isn't
now.
Isn't it Jones?
No,
Trae Young.
Trae Young. Trae Young. They've got kid from Wake Forest, John Collins.
That's a 1-2 punch, man. I mean, and those guys are scoring in the 30s every once in a while.
Yeah, I didn't
think Trae Young was gonna spark like he is right now. I mean, the guy has had a hell of a rookie season.
He has. He really has. I'm just looking at some of these names in here. They got Zion going first to the Knicks, which would be great. They got Ja Morant from Murray State going second to Phoenix, which actually would make sense. R.J. Barrett going to Cleveland. Rui Hachimura going to Chicago at number four. And then Kobe at number five. Coby White is not going to be playing basketball for North Carolina next year. He has played himself out of that situation. Like, I don't see him being able to stay another
year. Reddish?
They got Reddish at number eight to Washington.
And he's dropped a little bit. A couple of weeks ago, they had him in the top four.
He played awful last night. Yep. He played just flat out awful. Terrible. For a kid that's supposed to be a top three recruit, he's had all year.
Even offensively, he had two charges in like the first 8 minutes.
Yeah, he's like he's pushing or something. When they put Zion back in, it's like he can't figure out where he's supposed to be like in the offense. It's weird. But now back to the NBA here. The LA Lakers, they seem like they've waved the white flag on this season. They've shut down Lonzo Ball. They've shut down Brandon Ingram. Both of them have injuries. LeBron didn't play last night.
Yeah, they load management. Load management.
Yeah. Oh my god, I love that. When I see that on the ticker, load management.
Load management.
I'm gonna call Al on Monday and say, hey, I'm gonna take a day off.
Load management. You know how that goes. I gotta take this Monday off. What should the Lakers do in the offseason? I can't believe I am hearing rumblings from the national media that they should consider trading LeBron James.
You know.
I thought he had trade clause.
He probably does.
He must.
Trade him to where? Like, somewhere, where are you going to trade him?
It's not working.
If you trade him, then why are you going to Laker games? Like, what are you paying money for to watch? They've gone 6 years now without making the playoffs. LeBron was the main reason why I was so excited about I'm a Laker fan. I was so excited about watching the Lakers this year. And I think they would have gotten the playoffs if he didn't miss 18 games from injury or whatever.
Haskey.
Yeah.
Sacramento Kings. Los Angeles Lakers, who has the better franchise? I mean, obviously, right now, and for the next two or three years, as far as winning basketball.
Yeah, I'd say Sacramento.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I don't know, something's not right with this whole Lakers experiment. And you say shutting down Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram?
Yeah.
Lonzo Ball, disappointing. Brandon Ingram, disappointing.
I mean these Ingram had a good year this year. He's averaging 20 a game. He's got like a blood clot or something in his shoulder. So they shut him down.
He's averaging 20 a game?
I think so. Like 18 a game, something like that?
I don't know. I think there's a conspiracy against the Lakers by the rest of the league.
Were the Lakers positive with Lonzo Ball? I cannot remember. I think they were.
Can you guys find that out for us?
Yeah, because, I'll check real quick.
Okay, so I'm looking at Brandon Ingram's stats, too. Brandon Ingram, I wanted him to kind of turn into like a Durant light, and he's not going to be that.
Does he weigh 130 pounds?
His body and everything, I thought maybe he might be able to pull that off. This year he was averaging 18.3 points per game, shooting about 50% from the field. 5 rebounds, 3 assists. He was having a good year. He just got banged up a little bit. Now, Lonzo... They say the Lakers' defense is better when Lonzo is out there, and that he can play well with LeBron. The problem is he can't stay out there. He's been hurt both years he's been in the league. And
so disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, both of these kids were the second overall picks in their drafts. Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, the Lakers have done what they're supposed to do. These players just haven't panned out. And the Anthony Davis thing, that whole fiasco really destroyed the season for the Lakers, and because even after LeBron came back from injury, they're like 3-8 or something like that.
So is it more so that the players haven't panned out, or is there an issue with the player development? I mean, what is it?
I don't know.
A mix of all the things.
The parts don't mix. They should have kept Julius Randle last year. They should have signed him and kept him because they need that on this team. Yeah, they should have probably kept. Was it Robin Lopez they had?
I mean, I could honestly say, I would have kept Randall over Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, I would have.
Without a doubt.
Randall's in New Orleans, and he's playing well. He's
an NBA player. I mean, that guy's going to be there for 12 years, probably 12 or 13 real solid NBA seasons.
He was a top 5 or 6 pick himself, wasn't he?
He was good at Kentucky, absolutely.
So I don't know what the Lakers are going to do.
I mean, I don't know what they're going to do this offseason, but – isn't two of the biggest free agents coming up is Kevin Durant, and Kyrie's not a free agent this year, is he?
Yes, he is. Yeah. Yep.
So would those two be the biggest free agents?
Yeah.
Kawhi.
Out there?
Kawhi
Leonard's going to be a free agent?
This is a loaded free agent class.
Kemba
Walker will be a free agent if he doesn't sign a Supermax, which
signed yet?
No, they haven't. I mean, they can't offer it until I think after the season or something, right?
Yeah.
Or,
I'd love to talk about that. I'm itching. Gotcha. I'm itching.
Let's
And then DeMarcus Cousins, Klay Thomas?
DeMarcus Cousins will be free agents as well.
Draymond Green, right?
He's next year, 2020. But he signed with Clutch Sports this week, which is LeBron and Rich Paul's little thing or
Draymond's
whatever.
Draymond's gone.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to the Lakers. It doesn't mean all these guys that they're signing to Clutch Sports are all going to end up on the Lakers. If anything, it feels like no one wants to go play with LeBron. But let me hit the control room, getting some signals in there, and then I'm going to hit Haskell up on this Kemba talk. What's up?
I think one thing we're overlooking in all this LeBron James Lakers talk is something that's really obvious that I think everybody just kind of overlooked because it's LeBron James and he has been so good for so long. But that's just the thing. When has it ever been logical to try to build a franchise around a 34-year-old 15-year player?
That's a good point. Now, we thought it was going to be fun because we'd never seen LeBron hurt before until this year. He hadn't really ever missed time. And then he gets hurt, misses 18 games. I mean, that's a quarter of the season. And Now you have to start to think, okay, he's here for the three more years.
Yeah.
We owe him $120 million more or whatever it is, regardless of what happens. I think you have to try. I think the key has to be you have to bring in a second free agent, top-tier guy that's 10 years younger than LeBron. Mm-hmm. And I think that was going to be the plan. I think the plan was to bring Anthony Davis in, mm-hmm. and it would be LeBron and Anthony Davis's team. When LeBron ends this contract in 3 years, he'd be 37 or whatever. He probably would retire at that point, I would think. And it would be Anthony Davis's ball club. And at that point, Anthony Davis is 27, 28. And the Lakers, they win titles when they have a main big guy center mm-hmm. playing. Wilt, Kareem, Shaq. I know people don't like to hear it. Andrew Bynum, Paul Gasol.
Paul Gasol.
They always have a big guy, all-star player in the paint, and this Lakers team does not.
So what's the odds of them? What's the odds of them being able to make a trade happen where they get Anthony Davis?
I don't think the Pelicans want to trade Anthony Davis to the Lakers just out of pettiness. Like, I don't think they even want to make that happen.
Not after that debacle this past.
Yeah. Now, what I'd like to see happen is to see Kyrie and LeBron reunite in L.A. Like, I could see Kyrie going to L.A. His camp is saying that's not going to happen. That's why we left Cleveland, because we didn't want to play with LeBron anymore.
But things have changed.
Things have changed a little bit. And L.A. is L.A. You put Kyrie in, he's making movies. Mm-hmm. He's out here doing all this stuff, too. You put him with LeBron, two guys know how to play with each other. You don't have to lose Lonzo. You don't have to lose Hart or Ingram or Kuzma. Like, they're good parts, good young parts. They just never won anything. And you put Kyrie with that.
Now I agree with you.
You know, that would work.
If you had two Kyrie, championship guys.
And then the next year, Anthony Davis would be a free agent. You just sign him instead of getting rid of any of your assets.
Sign him.
Now
LeBron's going to be gone in a year or two.
After that, he'd be gone after 2 years. Kyrie and Anthony Davis
together.
With Kuzma and Josh Hart and all those
magic
guys.
Right now. Yeah, I hope they got this in their mind, man.
I'm hoping this is what they've decided to do, but, you know, it is what it is. Haskell, this is why I pushed the Hornets to segment four, because I knew you'd been on the second hour. Would you give $240 million to Kemba Walker?
No.
In a Supermax?
No, I would not.
Why would you not? Well, if you don't, what's the plan? What would you do?
Yeah, that's going to be the struggle. Is what is the plan? But then the question is what are the legitimate options? And so this goes back to the NBA All-Star Game, which some of this kind of went under the radar. But Charles Barkley was asked, I believe, some point between the dunk contest and the 3-point shooting contest. He said, "What is your best friend Michael Jordan going to do with Kemba? Is he going to re-sign him?" Insert long, dramatic pause. We don't hear Chuck do that very much. He goes, well, if I was the general manager, are you saying? And after that, they're like, yeah, if you were the general manager. And he goes, well, here's the deal with Kemba. He goes, are you really going to give $40 million to a guy that is going to be the star player on a team and creates a ceiling from an amount of money that the Hornets can go out and then spend that's not currently going to make the playoffs or a borderline playoff team? And that was the point, which became clear at that moment, that the buzz inside the Hornets organization, mm-hmm. or AKA the buzz from the night before when they were both drinking beers, MJ and Charles Barkley, are talking about why they're not going to re-sign Kemba. And so Rick Bunnell, Charlotte Observer this week, great column. Finally, somebody has put numbers together on what this contract would look like. So the Hornets can offer there's two forms of the Supermax: 5 seasons at $190 million, which would be $38 million a year. Or if Kemba becomes a NBA all-first teamer, they can go 5 seasons, $221 million, which is $44.2 million a year.
Gosh.
But as reported by Rick Bunnell this week, and this is what I really think is super interesting, the Mavs have made Kemba their number one priority in the offseason to sign Kemba. So they could offer potentially 4 years, $140 million, which is $35 million, but no state income tax. Mm. So this was a Haskell Shelton nerd calculation, but that's a taxable equivalent yield of about $36.92 million, which is pretty strong. And so then the other thing you got to consider is Jeremy Lamb's unrestricted free agent. Mm. You look at the free agent market last year, Marcus Smart scored 10 points a game, got paid $13 million a year. Jeremy Lamb is putting up 15 points a game and 6 rebounds a game. Now, his defense obviously not as strong, but at the shooting guard position, Jeremy Lamb's going to get paid. He's going to make $15, $17
million. Is he
going to
pay by us?
No, that's the thing is, you know, the Hornets could re-sign Lamb legitimately and then potentially go after somebody else. But if they go after Kemba, there's obviously Lamb's gone. And there's a very good possibility both of these guys are gone. So to the question of what do you do?
Asking back to they want Dallas wants Kemba Walker.
Number one priority.
Okay, so where does Doncic play? Isn't he the point guard?
Well, I mean, I think you can move those guys over. I mean, you obviously got Doncic, and then you got Hardaway, and then you got Trey Burke. All of those guys averaging double digits. And then Jalen Brunson, who the last five games has thrown up double digits. He came over in the Dennis Smith trade. And so the Mavs could potentially be loaded, with the thought process being they can move parts and absolutely create a scoring team there. So,
but if Kemba goes and Doncic, he's not going anywhere. And then you got Kristaps Porzingis. They're making some good moves. Yeah, I'd like to see them back in the game. Yeah. I'm sort of a Cuban fan. I like having him in there.
Well, and the thing is, if they get Kemba, they can go above the luxury tax threshold, whereas the Hornets are never going to do that.
That's true.
So they're going to be fine paying the taxes on that.
Wow.
336-777-1600 is the number to call if you want to chime in on the Charlotte Hornets or any of the NCAA stuff we've been talking about here. We do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we have not forgotten the NFL. Free agency opened up this week. There's a lot of movement across the league. Antonio Brown is now a Raider. Le'Veon Bell is now a Jet. What have our Panthers been doing? They've actually been doing a lot. So we'll take a look at the Panther moves and a look around the league. We'll talk a little NFL football next on The Rundown.
Shut up.
Sit down.
Are you?
Stand by.
You're listening to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
That's right.
Panther Talk brought to you by Giada's Trattoria Restaurant in Kernersville on Main Street with their signature stone oven, culture of hospitality, and North Carolina's best pizza. Giada's lets you and your family and friends share an authentic Italian experience with a twist. Everything is better by the stone oven at Giada's. Let's take a look at some of the Panthers' free agency moves so far this season, and we'll get more into this next week as more and more of these guys start getting signed. We'll take a bigger look at this. But in terms of the Panthers, they re-signed safety Eric Reed to a 3-year, $22 million deal. Fellas, was that a good idea or bad? I think it was good.
Good idea. I like it.
He's 26. I mean, he basically had a year off. He came into the Panthers season last year after the end of week 3. So he had no training camp. He had no preseason. And stepped right into a starting role, and they reward him with a 3-year deal. I think it's a good deal for the Panthers. They re-signed offensive tackle Darrell Williams to a 1-year, $6 million deal. I think that's a fantastic move. He was hurt last year in training camp. He dislocated a kneecap and he had a MCL tear. He came back for the opening week of the season, re-injured his leg again, and then they put him on IR. But he was an all pro in 2017. Like he was an all, and he's a guy. He's one of our guys. We drafted him. Like they were thinking he was going to leave. I guess the market wasn't what he thought it was going to be. So he's back, basically on a prove it deal. 1 year, $6 million. That kind of tightens up our offensive line. That along with which I think was the steal of the offseason so far. They signed the center Matt Paradis from Denver to a 3-year deal. Paradis was ranked the number 2 overall center on Pro Football Focus last season. They also re-signed backup quarterback Taylor Heineke.
I don't know why, but I like him.
And then they released Matt Khalil, which was kind of a surprise. People didn't think they were going to release him because of the cap hit. Captain Munnerlin, who was the nickel cornerback, who I'm glad to see gone because I thought he was too short to play the position, and linebacker Ben Jacobs. So overall, how have the Panthers done so far in this offseason, considering they had limited funds to work with? I think Herney's doing his thing, to be honest.
I think they're certainly filling in the patches that we would want to see. Protect Cam, number one goal there. But I think what he has done is really set the stage for the draft where he can be flexible, especially with the Heineke signing. If they want to go out and they find value and they want to pick up some sort of quarterback project, they can – possibly do that if they want to continue to build on the O-line, if they want to go out and draft some defensive backs or fill in a linebacker spot from Thomas Davis being missing. You got a lot of different options and ways to go here to fill and plug the holes to make this team one of the contenders in the NFC South.
What'd you guys think of Funchess signing 1 year, $13 million.
I think he's a very lucky guy because I wouldn't have paid him $13 million for one season to play wide receiver. Good luck to him.
Yeah, I wouldn't have paid him that either. But I don't think that's why he had to go.
That was a good chunk there.
I don't think he's worth that. But when you think about it, with T.Y. Hilton, Ebron, and now Funchess, you've got huge fast targets moving down the field for Andrew Luck. And I think the Colts are looking at that and probably just thinking, all right, we got him the weapons.
Yep.
And if Funchess doesn't work out year one and take the double teams off T.Y.
Good move.
Didn't the Colts have like $100 million in salary cap space or something coming into this offseason? They had them and the Browns had an obscene amount of money laying around.
Look out for the Colts, though.
I think the Colts did have a lot of money laying around because they spent very little money on their defense, which is very young, by the way. And I think their defense is up and coming. So I think they just decided to spend some extra money on the offensive side because the defense looks great.
Speaking of the Browns, the blockbuster deal sending Odell Beckham Jr. to Cleveland. Are the Browns the favorite to get to the Super Bowl?
I'm not going to say a favorite to get to the Super Bowl, but I'm going to pick them in their division.
Pittsburgh took a step back.
Yeah.
Baltimore lost a lot of defensive guys. I know they signed Earl Thomas, but he's coming off a leg injury.
Cincinnati.
Go
Cleveland.
What? Yeah.
Great.
It's crazy to me. You guys know I have in-laws in Cleveland, and my mother-in-law is up there right now. She splits time between there and here with two homes, and I'm wondering what the feeling is in Cleveland right now. Like, is it like just excitement, or is it kind of like a almost like let's wait and see what happens
here?
Like,
what are going to be? Excitement, man.
Oh, well, I'm sure they're excited in Cleveland. I mean, they made some great free agency trades. The only thing that bothers me is did they make the right choice for the head coach in Freddie Kitchens? I know he's the offensive coordinator who moved up, but you also let Greg Williams go, who was the defensive coordinator and the interim coach who went 5-3 last year. And it was shocking that they let him go. He was the same guy who won the championship with the Saints during the whole Bounty Gate deal. He was the guy, but he made that defense play very well last year. And I'm just wondering what kind of coach is Freddie Kitchens going to be, considering he has absolutely no head coaching experience. I mean, he was the assistant coach of the year in college, and then that's what got him promoted or got him the offensive coordinator job in the NFL. So with him moving into the head coaching job with the Browns, I'm hoping that he is the right decision.
The only thing that bothers me with the Browns right now, Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry are number one and number three in terms of highest paid players on the team, your two wide receivers. Odell's 16.7, Jarvis is 12.5. Typically, you don't win a Super Bowl with a wide receiver that's the highest paid player on the team.
Well, that's only because they have a rookie quarterback and a rookie contract.
I'm just looking at all the talent they now have that's young. Baker Mayfield at quarterback, Heisman Trophy winner.
And I love this. Kareem Hunt, okay, he's suspended for 8 games, but he comes in for the back end of the season with Chubb. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and
they have weapons.
Duke Johnson.
I can't wait to watch.
Yeah, Duke Johnson from Miami in the backfield, too.
Oh.
You got Myles Garrett on the defensive side on a rookie deal. They just signed Sheldon Richardson for the defensive line at $8 million. That's going to be a great pickup for them.
But it does look like the Browns are trying to pick up Steve Wilks to be their defensive coordinator.
That would be interesting.
Which is the Panthers' old defensive coordinator who just got fired from the Cardinals, Arizona Cardinals.
They got a lot of young guys on rookie deals. I'm scrolling through their cap.
Who's the GM making all these deals?
John Dorsey.
Wow.
He came over from where did he come over from?
Looks like the Browns had the 21st defense in the NFL last year. So the question is, now you're giving up picks, how do you build the defense? And obviously we've got some talk around coordinator upgrades potentially there, but they've got to put some bodies on the other side of the ball. With that said, I will definitely be watching a lot of Browns games because I think they're going to be really, really exciting on offense.
I can't wait to see the Browns play.
How about a Browns-Kansas City game? I mean, that might be a 48-45.
John Dorsey, he came from Green Bay. He was a scout. Director player personnel for the Seahawks in 99, came back to the Packers. He was the Chiefs general manager from 2013 to 16, and then he went over to the Browns 2017. So he's got some experience doing this stuff. Real quick, what are the Giants doing? I thought they had a plan. They traded away Odell Beckham Jr. I thought, okay, they're gonna tank or whatever, although they went 3-whatever last year. I thought they were going to go back to being a running team. We all know Dave Gettleman in this room and what he's about. He doesn't like paying skill position players a whole lot of money. So I thought it was really odd when he gave Odell Beckham Jr. this deal last year and then to trade him away. But then they signed Golden Tate to a $22 million deal like 2 days later, and they already have a slot receiver. They have Sterling Shepard at slot, and Golden Tate's a slot receiver. What are they doing? What are they doing?
I don't think anyone knows right now.
No one's like, I don't know.
Well, they're rebuilding through the draft is one thing with the picks and picking up Peppers for the defensive side of the ball. But they have one of the most unique talents in the NFL with Saquon Barkley.
Yeah. Right.
He, to me, I know that a lot of folks said, hey, his stats were inflated from garbage time, but I've watched a lot of Big Ten football, and that guy is really special in terms of what he can do, running the ball, catching the ball out of the backfield. You've got Eli that's older, and you got to put some weapons around that guy.
Absolutely. Right now.
Though, yeah, yeah.
Because running back,
you want to improve, obviously, too. You want over the next 2 to 3 years with his rookie contract, you certainly want to bring in some folks that highlight and accentuate what he's going to do out of the backfield.
And now I want to introduce a segment that we're going to start today. 1 minute with intern Aaron. Aaron, your Kansas City Chiefs are kind of imploding here, and I thought I'd give you a minute to address the triad as to what the hell are the Kansas City Chiefs doing right now? And actually, Sawyer, I need you to set a stopwatch because I'm only giving them a minute to actually get all this out. So if Sawyer's got a clock or something ready, 1 minute with intern Aaron. Today is, and this will be different each week, but for today, what the hell are the Kansas City Chiefs doing, Aaron?
Kansas City Chiefs are just fine. Everything is all right in Kansas City, and I'll tell you why. Two numbers, 1 and 5. Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, so they'll be just fine. The defense was atrocious last year, so they got to blow it up. Justin Houston was owed $15 million. Eric Berry owed a lot of money. D Ford owed a lot of money. And they're switching over to a 4-3 from a 3-4, bringing in Steve Spagnuolo, getting that other old dusty guy on up out of there so we can fix this leaky defense, win us a chip, baby.
Leaky.
Brett Veach freed up $39 million in cap space this offseason by making the moves that he's making. They got an extra second-round pick this year as well. So we'll see what happens after the draft. The rumors surrounding Tyreek Hill are just that, rumors for right now. Under investigation, but he is not listed as a suspect, so we're going to wait till the facts come out and keep a cool, calm, and level head. The Kansas City Chiefs will be just fine. Still winning the AFC West this year. It's always screw the Raiders.
That was well done. Good job there. That was well done.
That's awesome.
And we'll start doing that in the second hour of the rundown while intern Aaron is still here with us.
But I think Tyreek Hill might be in trouble.
Yeah. You know what? I saw the thing on ESPN. It came across the ticker or whatever. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's his girlfriend that's the issue because it said he's not even in the police report. So I'm like, what is – maybe I need to read what's going on. But from what I gathered, it sounds like something happened with his girlfriend and some kid or something. And I guess it was at his house or I don't know. I don't know exactly the parameters of all this. Intern Aaron probably would know, but what's up?
It's his son. There's reports that say there are reports that are saying his son suffered a broken arm. However, there are conflicting reports that are saying his son is just fine. Like I said, a lot of rumors, not a lot of fact coming out. However, they do say that there was a charge dismissed. There was no charges filed in a March 5th incident. And then the other report is from, I believe, March the 14th, in which he is not listed as a suspect. Just maybe, I guess, a person of interest. So, like I said, still under investigation. No details have really come out. A lot of this just stems from his previous incident before he got into the league, stemming from some domestic violence. So we'll wait and see what happens with Tyreek Hill.
All right. Okay. So that's out there.
All Oakland Raider allegations to this point.
Right, exactly.
I think that's what intern Aaron's saying.
So I have some Hornet tickets I was going to give away, but we're towards the end of the show here. What I'm going to do, I'm going to hold them. We're going to give them away next Saturday because the date on them is for Tuesday, March 26th against the San Antonio Spurs. So you would still be able to, you know, go to that game or whatnot. So next week I have a pair of tickets for Charlotte Hornets versus the San Antonio Spurs. Could be a crucial game for the Hornets and their playoff chances. Listen for that. We'll do that next week. But coming up here, odds and ends, a rapid fire round. We get 1 minute to debate random topics. And this will be Haskell's first time in odds and ends. So we'll see how that goes. Coming up next on The Rundown.
Clap your hands and stomp your feet.
Yeah!
It's going to be one big party.
Yeah, I'm on.
Back to The Rundown with Desmond Johnson.
this weekend on the Sports Hub, your Charlotte Hornets taking on Dwayne Wade and the Miami Heat Sunday, 1 p.m. right here on the Sports Hub. Hopefully the Hornets can actually, we never really decided what we wanted the Hornets to do. If we want them to tank or if we want them to really try to get in the playoffs, we just kind of left it.
I think that's where the whole Hornets Nation is.
Odds and ends. We're going to get into it. You guys probably know by now how this goes. Our producer extraordinaire Sawyer will set a stop clock for 1 minute. At the end of 1 minute, we will hear a buzzer sound. Five topics, rapid fire. Let's go.
All right, here we go. Starting out, you are the Arizona Cardinals. Do you take Kyler Murray or Joey Bosa at the first pick of the 2019 NFL Draft?
Well, first of all, it's Nick Bosa, isn't it?
Joey.
Yeah, I think so. I saw Joey.
That's my fault. Yep. Yeah, it's Nick Bosa.
I'll take Joey Bosa.
Yeah, I know. Joey
all day long.
I definitely take Nick Bosa because Kyler Murray, to me, he's fast, he's good, but there are linemen who are just as fast as him, and he doesn't have enough girth to be out there on that field. So Nick Bosa.
Go Nick Bosa. Stick with the quarterback you have already and work with him. Who is it? Josh Rosen.
Who everybody was high on last year.
Yep.
Kyler Murray's body reminds me of Johnny Manziel. Like the way he runs. Sure, like he's little, so his hands kind of flop around like while he's running. Like almost like a small, like child almost. I don't know. I said Kyler Murray would get drafted first overall, although I wouldn't draft him first. I would rather have Dwayne Haskins.
But you give Josh Rosen a Nick Bosa at tight end? Come on, man.
No, he played Nick Bosa.
No, he plays defensive end.
Oh. Yeah.
He's out of Ohio State.
He's Joey Bosa's brother.
Yeah. He was hurt all year. I wouldn't expect you to know that.
Yeah, he stepped out and was like, I'm not coming back.
And, why was I thinking he was a – okay. What's Joey? Defensive end as well.
Defensive end too. All right, sorry.
All right, next up, would you put UNCG in the NCAA tournament?
Ooh, landmines at the end of the show. I would not. They don't have a signature win that's good enough to be in the field of 68. I'm sorry. They beat Furman. They beat East Tennessee State. Cool. You played Wofford three times and lost to them all three times. You lost at Kentucky. You lost at LSU. Great losses, I guess, but I don't know what a great loss really means. You gotta beat somebody. Beat somebody or just beat Wofford in the SoCon final, and then none of this is even a question. You get an auto bid like last year, and –
Yeah, let's make it clear. All four of us here, if we hear their names announced tomorrow night, we're going to jump off our couch and we're going to be ecstatic. And but they're not going to make it. They needed to beat Wofford in that championship game.
And if you can't beat the top team in your conference, I can't say that you deserve to go in when you had three chances to do it. But again, I've made arrangements where if UNCG does get in any kind of postseason, we're going to be playing them on the Sports Hub. So. Whether it's NIT, cool. NCAA tournament, whatever.
Go Spartans.
We'll get them in after the buzzer.
Go ahead, Sawyer.
All right. We're more than likely to have an NBA playoff season with no LeBron for the first time since 2005. Are you looking forward to a LeBron-less NBA playoff?
Actually, you know what I'm looking forward to? The music bed that's supposed to be playing underneath this segment. I just realized that there's no music playing under anything. It's throwing me off, like, time-wise. What's going on in there?
Well,
what's happening?
To hit the buzzer, we have to have the hotkey, and they're both on the same one. So it's either
that's on me
low
too.
Buzzer, and that kind of takes away the
oomph. I gotcha. My bad. Music. Sorry, I'm cutting into our minute here.
Yeah, you're trying to because we're talking about LeBron and our Lakers. We don't want to talk too
much.
Are
y'all looking forward to a LeBronless?
Yes.
This isn't just LeBronless June. This is LeBronless April, LeBronless May, and LeBronless June.
Here's the deal. I'll say this. If you are an NBA fan and you are not excited about Giannis, I know that everyone just says Eastern Conference, they're terrible. Look, if you can't appreciate what that guy's doing, I am really, really looking forward to seeing what he's going to do in that team.
It's going to be weird to see like Milwaukee versus Golden State in the NBA Finals, wouldn't it?
But I mean,
I'm definitely not looking forward to a LeBron-less playoffs. I mean, he's been there the last 9 years.
I was so happy the Lakers were going to finally be back in the playoffs, even though I knew they weren't going to win the whole thing, just to have them in there.
Yeah.
And now they're not.
Yeah, I mean, you can't feed me steak for 9 years and then expect me to eat bologna and be happy about it.
Is it fried bologna, though?
Oh, that's how you're talking. I tell you what.
A little different.
We already been LeBronless since he moved to the West. We haven't even really seen him play that much this year.
That's
so, we're missing him throughout the whole season, to be honest with you.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
All right, what is the best way to defend Zion Williamson?
Trip him.
That didn't work either.
No,
that didn't work either. I thought that the best way to defend him would be to make him tired, to run him. That's what I thought Carolina was going to do, and
he
it was
got
working.
Stronger.
Yeah, he got angry or something, and that didn't seem to work after a while. I think you have to kind of get him in foul trouble, which is hard to do because he's so quick. You can't really make him foul you. I don't know. I don't know what you're supposed to do. Honestly, I don't know what you're supposed to do.
I think the best way to defend him is to put Giannis on him. Just bring Giannis.
That's right.
Over we're going to wait a year for that.
And let's put it this way. They played Jim Boeheim, Hall of Fame coach, on Thursday, and Roy last night, another Hall of Fame coach, and they can't figure it out. Yeah. So
they've tried.
You have to put two guys on him at all times. And with those two guys on him at all times, when he turns around and shoots, one guy's assignment has to be to body him out. And while you're double-teaming him, you have to make him move in the direction of his hurt knee, period.
Real quick, they got to leave. Is it Joey White? Or who's the guy on?
Kobe White?
Jack White.
Jack White. Yeah. Just leave him open, man. And put
they were
two
doing
guys
that last night.
There.
Like, they were just leaving him all alone over on the other side of the court.
Where did Jack get that black eye, I wonder?
I was going to ask that, too. I was like, who punched Jack White in the face?
I mean, we were talking pretty bad about him last weekend. Maybe he just got a black eye from us.
Somebody just punched him in the face in food line somewhere out in Durham. All right, sorry, we got one more.
All right, yeah, last one. Should Wake Forest athletic director John Curry release Danny Manning and offer the position to UNCG head coach Wes Miller?
So drop that in our lap at the last minute of the show.
I think what he should do is rearrange that sentence. Like, he should offer the position to him first and then fire him. Because you don't want to fire him and then offer the position and he doesn't
take
it.
And Wes says no?
Yeah.
Well, from my understanding, Wes Miller's family are big boosters at Wake Forest. He's correct. From this area. It would allow him to avoid this question of, can my team get into the NCAA tournament every year? Because he would be in a Power 5. The problem is he'd be going up against Roy Williams, Coach K, Leonard Hamilton, Tony Bennett in recruiting and just overall just everything else. I mean, I said it the other day on the radio. Wake Forest has only ever had three five-star kids ever in their history. Chris Paul, Josh Howard, and Jalen Horde. That's it. Danny Manning brought in one of those guys. I don't know if Danny deserves another year. I'd kind of like to see him get one more year, but I don't know if Wake Nation can take another year. To be honest, they're ready for him to go now. Wes would be a good pick.
I don't think Wes wants it.
You don't think Wes would want Wake Forest?
I think Wes is going to hold out for a better job. Yep.
I've got him on a short list for replacing Roy in a couple years.
So
him and Hubert Davis, actually.
Yeah, I really think he's
proving he can
I don't
do
see Hubert Davis taking over
I assume
Carolina.
That's why he's on the bench. I don't know. Why else would you give up a comfy job at College Game Day to come be an assistant coach at Carolina for six years? I thought they were grooming him. I don't know. But, hey, we're at the end of the show. Catch us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. We're all over the place. Video clips available from netcastsports.com on YouTube. Download the WSGS Sports Hub app from Google Play or iTunes. And we will be back next week. Enjoy your weekend.